Bet you going fishing all of the time. Baby going fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife is gonna catch more fish than you.
Hey, boys and girls, moms and dads, and children of all ages. If you've got ships at sea or ships on the rocks or a drink on the rocks, which actually sounds really good right about now, been sick the last week. Maybe that's why I've been sick. I haven't drank at all. I haven't had a drop.
Maybe.
So, anyway, Robert's in the chair across from me, and RJ's running the stuff, trying to make us sound a little less, well, who knows, maybe a little more. But one way or another, it's Fish and Franks. We're going to go radio fishing, part of the radio fishing family, let's say. But Frank and Robert here with this week's, we got your top five, we got some other stuff. Had a weird incident. I've been sick on a dog for the last week or two, and antibiotics, found out that I'm allergic to the detergent that the wife is using on my clothes. I literally nice. Have...
Did she do that deliberately?
I think so. Life was, everything was going along fairly well, and I think she just wanted me to have something to think about. So now I've got these red things all over myself, and some in very inconspicuous places that makes it really difficult to scratch while you're standing in the store. It's like, no, I'm not doing that. I'm just rubbing an itch. Okay. But a friend of mine called me up. He wanted to go take him and some young people out tarpon fishing. And so Robert agreed, and we spent a mad day trying to get my boat back and running and get it up. And that float thing I got is pretty awesome, isn't
it?
Oh,
yeah, it is.
Now
that you've got it adjusted to where you want it, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah, I got one of these things where I drive the boat on and off. It's a company out of Minnesota. And most of them I didn't like because it's really hard to get the boat off. And this one, I had to tweak it. Took me a while to get it tweaked out. But, man, that thing's nice now. You just hit reverse, and the boat comes off. You drive up on like you're on a trailer and park it, and done. And it's pretty awesome. So, anyway, a friend called me up wants us to take those people out. Now, we went out last night, left the house around 5:30.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was just a bit sporty.
It was windy. We had, like, all these different places we were going to go, and then as it got dark, we're going to come back up to the bridge and do tarpon fishing. But it was blowing probably 20 miles an hour right out of the west. And that's tough, because when you're coming out of that area there between Port Charlotte and Punta Gorda, that gets real sporty right there.
Yeah,
and
that's the worst wind scenario you could have for that situation.
Yeah, they're just tough. And so all of a sudden, we get out there, and we go to pick them up, get out. It's too rough, so we're going to go up river and hide. Well, thank God the river's up there.
Yeah.
Because right there at Lashley Park.
Thank God you know it so well, too.
Well, at Lashley Park, we picked them up at Lashley, and we go out, and we said, okay, this is too rough, because even though I could get out there, coming back in the dark in rough water is never fun.
No.
And especially when you got six or seven people on the boat. And so it was a little weird. So we ended up going upriver. We stopped, and the tide was really strange last night. And we ended up a few catfish, a stingray.
Snapper, ladyfish.
Yeah, some snapper, some ladyfish. We stopped at different islands. And, we were bending the rod pretty steady. It wasn't wonderful fishing, but it was bending the rod. We were having a good time, and they're all talking, doing everything. And my old boat performed very nicely.
Always does.
But then I guess the point of it is, we were catching fish and all that, but we go down to the bridge, and we're going to do tarpon. Now, here's what I need to know, Robert, because Robert's kind of our tarpon aficionado. This is his obsession. When I went up to the bridge and I made the decision to cruise looking for fish, now, do you think that was the right decision, or should I just anchor it up? And the reason I didn't want to anchor up, just so you can get into my head on this, was the tide coming in and that wind blowing in on the tide, it would have been very difficult to anchor up and be somewhere good. So did I screw up? Should I just anchor it up, chunk some baits out there and hope for the best, maybe through lures, or scouting the bridge? We were idling on very slowly, staying out into the light, looking up under the bridges, looking for tarpon. Wrong move or right move? Did I blow it or...
No, I think you absolutely made the right move. You know, the with that incoming tide and the incoming wind, just there's no real safe place or even practical place to do that for those fish.
Well, we would have been in between the bridges. I could have probably anchored. I just didn't know.
Well, not necessarily.
I don't think I had a really strong feeling there was going to be fish there for that.
Well, exactly. And that's the thing is, you know, because those fish there at the bridge can... They might go off at 9 o'clock at night. They might not go off until 4 o'clock in the morning. So positioning yourself and just blind anchoring and hoping for the best, I personally wouldn't do it either. You know, I'm going to kind of troll that bridge and just like you did and like we were doing was looking for either a rolling fish or a fish blowing up on bait or most importantly, just looking for some sort of life, you know, a little bit of bait fish moving around or concentrated in a spot. And that would be maybe a place where you would want to hang out. But in those situations, even if we did find the bait, I don't know if it would have been real practical to anchor up and wait for it because it was a little bumpy.
Yeah, we could have anchored up and fishing out of the back of the boat instead of, you know, broadside. I like broadsiding the boat. But... So you don't think I actually blew it on the idea? Because I was sitting there, and we never saw a tarpon, never got a bump, never did anything. We were there till about 10 o'clock, from dark till about 10, which is actually a little early to be doing the tarpon stuff there.
Yeah.
One of the big things when people want to tarpon fish around some of the bridges is understanding the car traffic is the problem. And one of the reason the bite goes off so late at night or slash early in the morning is the noise from the cars is deafening underneath those bridges, and especially once you get under the water. The fish can't really hear anything going on because of the rumble vibration from the cars going across.
Absolutely. You know, that vibration of every one of those cars going over just literally translates down every piling into that water column. I mean, basically, it's like a charge of electricity, essentially. You know, it's just vibrating all the way down. And, I mean, none of us like to sit inside of a bass drum.
No, and I can tell you, as a diver, that's really true. A couple of times, when I was younger, I got gigs to work on bridge pilings. And it's loud. You actually can't stay down very long because you get a headache.
Yeah.
It's so loud. So, yeah, that's and I'm sure it's even worse on the fish.
And so what my thinking is, and we've proved this true, whether it's with snook or tarpon, you watch the bridge and figure out the base time that the traffic pretty much stops. There's, always going to be a car here or there, you know, but every few minutes doesn't hurt anything. But when there's pretty much a car leaving and another car coming on, even that much traffic slows the bite down tremendously. I first figured this out at Elgin back in the 80s. We'd be out there fishing, and then we noticed that it was around 10 o'clock at night, the fishing would actually start picking up pretty good. By midnight, 1, 2 in the morning, depending on what tide was going on and everything, your fishing would get pretty good. But before 10, it was real hit or miss, and maybe you're getting something, maybe you're not. And we couldn't figure out. We were noticing the time, but we never really noticed what was going on. Then I started noticing it was the cars.
Yeah.
Once the cars were gone, and last night the bridge traffic was mild, but it was steady.
Yeah, it was definitely steady. And I think the other thing that plays into it, like in particular that bridge, it's a very much a pedestrian bridge. You know, unlike El Jobin, you've got a lot of people on bicycles, you've got a lot of people that are walking the bridge, and then you've also got anglers standing on it too, so adding those shadows being cast over it with the overhead lights, I think sometimes can hinder you a little bit too. So you
I wouldn't have thought that. That's a good
way to look at it. Yeah, you got all this.
I wasn't clicking on that one at all.
Fish are always concerned about what's going on above them, right, because of ospreys and things like that.
Yeah, their entire lives, all their major predators have been coming from above, at least when they were young, so it's still instilled in their mind.
Well, seagulls, terns, ospreys, herons, egrets, everything was trying to eat them as they were babies.
Yeah. So I've just noticed that, at the 41 Bridge or Peace River Bridge, I've noticed that when there is more foot traffic, it's sometimes slower. At times you'll find that, there's always like the south end or the northbound bridge seems to light up a little bit better. Well, the southbound bridge for me has always been slower for the tarpon fishing, more so than the northbound bridge. And the only thing I can figure is that southbound side has a lot more foot traffic on it than the northbound side.
Yeah, for some reason or other, everybody walks. Well, I guess they want to look at the harbor.
Well, you look at the harbor, plus there's good parking on that side that's easy access to it. So I think that's all a part of it. But for me, it's always been tough. I mean,
The bridge, the western side has always been the slower side for as far as tarpon goes. I've actually done better on that one for cobia, snook, black drum. That's always been my better bridge. Right. But for tarpon itself, I do way better on the northbound bridge.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Even though you were with me when you took me out, and another captain took me out to catch me my very first tarpon was on that southbound side.
Yeah, and it was on the north end of the southbound.
Yeah, but still.
That was a smaller fish.
That was a 100-pounder. That was the one that we videotaped that just whooped me because it never jumped. Remember, it took us almost all the way to Colony Point.
No, I was thinking of the little tarpon.
Oh yeah, no. So
we hooked it up at the 41 Bridge and actually landed that fish the other side of Fisherman's Village.
Yeah.
That's a long ride.
My very first tarpon never jumped. It came up and did a little head roll, and that was it. And I was inexperienced with fighting the fish, but they wanted me to be able to land it, and I was stubborn. Well, I'm still stubborn.
I was going to say you were stubborn.
I was bound and determined to land that fish. So, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, just kind of. I know it's not the most wonderful thing, but what I picked out to go down there with last night. Couple of big bombers, the white and chartreuse bomber, the Texas chicken, and the red and white bomber in the bigger sizes, the 16 and the big ones, 6 inches or more, larger size bomber. Now, casting those up underneath there has always been a pretty good bet for tarpon. I've trolled them a few times. I've never had great success. I think I lucked into a fish once or twice trolling them. But pretty much it's always been casting, being out in the light, casting up into the dark. So the number one thing you're going to need, if you want to go do this, any bridge, anywhere you can hear my voice. Doesn't really matter if you're going to catch fish there at night. If it has lights on the top, street lights is what we're talking about, the big street lights. So and almost every bridge nowadays has street lights on it.
Yeah.
So what that does is create a very dark place underneath the bridge and out a little bit. The side with the lights on, the shadow line is going to be much closer to the bridge. This other side, the shadow line extends out much further. Now, you don't want to have your boat in the dark. Your boat needs to stay out into the light, a good cast over towards the bridge.
Yeah.
And you're out there, you need a big hat, something with a huge bill on it. And because all that bright overhead light, if that's in your eyes, you're night blind. You cannot see in the dark where are the pilings if the fish are rolling. First thing you got to have is a big bill on a hat to block the sunlight from the overhead street lights so that you can see into the dark up underneath that bridge. I'd say that's, next to the fishing pole, probably your most important thing.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, people usually look at me strange when I show up with a baseball hat, and it's not because I'm trying to keep my hair under control. It's literally for that glare and being able to see those fish. You know, it helps a lot, even though you're nighttime fishing. It's amazing the difference it'll make.
Yeah, it's one of the things I learned a long time ago. If you're fishing around anything man-made at night, make sure you got a hat, because there's always a light somewhere that's blinding you to what you actually want to see. Now, have you ever trolled the bombers and done very good up there on tarpon?
I've hooked a couple on them trolling, but not nearly as many as I would think I would.
Yeah.
Because I do better on snook at Eljo Bean trolling it, but never done good on tarpon on it.
All right. Now, I liked casting the bombers. The storm shadtails. Now, it depends whether you're using the 4-inch, the 5, the 6. If you're looking for probably more numbers of tarpon, I think the 4 or the 5-inch. If you're looking for a bigger tarpon, probably a 6-inch.
I'll agree with that, because I think that 4 and 5-inch is going to get you a lot more bites by a variety of sizes, mostly on the smaller end, but also snook are going to whack it pretty well, too.
Yeah, a little more species diversification with that 4-inch storm wild eye. Now, I throw that out and just kind of slow reel it in. I don't do a lot of jigging with that when I'm up by the bridge. Do you give a lot of lift to the rod? Are you jigging it a lot when you use that?
Just on the first initial when it hits the water. Like if I cast up next to one of the pilings, I'll let it sink, and then I'll give it one good, nice, real long sweep upwards, pulling it up, and then I start to let it drop back down and fall back. Then I just do a nice slow retrieve coming back to me.
Yeah, for some reason,
I like keeping it close to those pilings, trying to keep it in that strike zone, but usually the current's moving fast enough where you really only get one maybe good lift, and at that point it starts to sweep out, so I'm trying to stay as much in that shadow line as possible.
All right. With the storm wild eye shad, that's good. I've caught tarpon on rattle traps, but I've never thrown one there at the bridge for tarpon. You know, like the 3/4 ounce, right. 1 ounce rattle traps.
And I never have either, honestly. I mean, you have really, really good success with rattle traps. I don't.
Yeah, I just, I don't know why. I've never thought about using the rattle trap down there, because I use the small rattle traps on baby tarpon a lot. I do very well with that. I just kind of random thought. I've got rattle traps here. Now, I brought rattle traps with us last night because I was going to try trolling the bumpers for the snook. Now, three lures I use for trolling those wooden bumpers. Now, I've done this out at Tom Adams in Englewood. I've done it in Cape Coral on the bridges. I haven't done it further north up in the Clusatchee. I've fished up there a lot, but I've never done the bumper trolling. And by bumpers, I mean the wooden protectors, so when the boats go through underneath the bridge in the center span, they usually have wood there in case the boat keeps the boat off of the concrete, so to speak. This is the actual shipping boat channel part of there. But all those pilings make a tremendous amount of structure. It's a reef. It's one of the few places you can be in the middle of the river and still find snook.
Yeah.
Because snook are going to go along the pilings, and they'll follow those bridge pilings all the way out to the middle, end up hanging around those bumpers a lot. Now, I don't do well on tarpon around the bumpers. I don't know why. I didn't think of that till just now.
I didn't really give it much thought either, but I've never really done good around those bumpers either.
I've ever caught a tarpon where the wooden bumper supports are.
I've hooked a couple, but nothing consistently. Usually they're down a little bit further from it, you know, one or two sets of pilings away from it. You know, the other thing that those bumpers have on most of the bridges is they have lights, and most of them are overhead lights.
Well, they got the green light up above, reds and greens. They got lights on the wooden bumpers. And on each end, state law says they have to have a sign saying what the clearance from the surface of the water to the base of the bridge is. So if you have a boat, like it's 42 feet on one of the bridges here, 44 feet another, I think Eljo Bean's like 30 foot or something like that. I don't really remember. But there, it has to be a clearly marked thing, and you'll just see numbers. It'll say like 30, 31, 32, 33. It usually is about a 4 to 6 foot variant on it. And at the top is a white light pointing down towards the water.
Yeah.
Now, that white light is historically a great place to catch snook, because the white light, bright white light shining down on the water, attracts bait fish. And where the bait fish get attracted to, the snook get attracted to.
Yeah, and the overhead light, you know, it works better than a submerged light.
Well, a submerged light, you changed 8 billion years of history.
Right.
For now, once you put the light on the bottom, then sunshine is coming from underneath the fish shining at the surface.
Yeah.
And that, the shadows are wrong. Everything's wrong. You've really just almost ruined your chance of catching fish. Now, unlike that, if you put a light above the water and have it shining down into the water, that's the same as sunlight. Now you've got this little mini spot of sunlight. And with the underwater lights, I cast on the outside of those lights. I don't cast into the light, hardly ever.
Right.
But with the above water lights, I throw right under the light, right in the middle of the light, and that's usually how you get hit. Tossing a white bait in there, free line shrimp, free line white bait, even a lot of different lures can be tossed up in there, and you're literally throwing them as close to where dead center of that light as possible.
Yeah, I mean, and the couple of reasons for it is, I mean, you've got strong current, so once you hit in that center, it allows it to drift through a little bit and get closer to the edge, so you're in this different strike zone throughout that whole drift. But a lot of times those fish are focused on that center part of the beam because it is the brightest point. And it seems like they pop a lot more consistently towards the center of that overhead light than they do along the perimeter of that light. That's what I've noticed over the years.
Now, when I go snook fishing in those wooden bumpers, I'm going to go trolling. I'm in, operating the boat. I'm at center console. And now you really want your lure to be about 10 inches or so away from the wooden bumpers. So I have somebody stand in front of me, and it's actually easier to troll off the back, but I can't get what's going on if he's behind me. So I have him stand on the right front corner of the boat, far forward as I can get him, holding the rod at a 90-degree angle from the boat. Now, that rod sticking out, if the person holding the rod, if my boat drifts a little away from the pilings, he can extend his arm out, keeping that bait within a few inches of the wood. If the boat drifts a little closer to the pilings, he can pull his arm back so the rod doesn't hit there. I'm using him because when you're going long, especially with the current, you're trying to keep the lure in action. You're going 2 to 3 miles an hour is good trolling speeds for those bumpers. I'll go out from the end of the bumpers where they have the two of them, and I'm always doing it off the right side of the boat, I guess because I'm right-handed. But what I do, and it makes more sense traffic-wise, too. But I go outside the right side, and I get 150 feet out. I'll cast the rattle trap out away from the boat. Now, I want it about a boat length and a half, so let's say about 30 feet behind the boat. That includes when the guy walks to the front of the boat. So your initial cast, you want about a 40-foot cast. Cast it out, close your bail, and the guy walks to, or the woman, walks to the front of the boat and holds the rod out at a 90-degree angle offside of the boat so that it's going to be pointing towards the wooden bumper system. I engage the motor, and I'm going up, dragging that lure 2-3 miles an hour. If you go slower than 2, lure's going to go down to the bottom on you. Rattle traps will sink too much. If you go more than 3, you're not going to hit the fish. It's not in front of them long enough for them to decide they want to hit it. They've got to see it. Okay, that looks good. Maybe I'll eat it. That all takes a second or so. And if the lure's going too fast, they're not going to have time to decide. So I'm going along 2 to 3 miles an hour, and I go up next there. Now, with the guy in front of me, and they've got that rod out, holding it, kind of adjusting it, if a fish hits, I'm going to see that rod push right to the back. It's just going to be jerked towards the back of the boat. I'm immediately going to go to neutral, and then I'm going into reverse, and I'm spinning the wheel so the motor is taking the back of the boat away from the wood. You cannot turn the boat out away from the wood. You're too close. You're within 6 feet. Boats turn from the back. The front, a car, you turn the front tires of the car, and the front of the car turns. With a boat, you're pushing the motor, and to turn left, the motor has to push the back of the boat to the right. And if you did that trying to turn out, you're going to run the motor up onto the fishing line because that's the side it's on already. So the motor's heading right towards your line, and it's going to shove the back of your boat into the wood. It's like a wall there. You're going to crash your boat into it. But if you hit reverse and pull the back of the boat away from the wood, and then have the guy with the fishing pole or the woman walk to the back of the boat. So as they're walking back and you're pulling that back of the boat out away from that wood, that's directing your... You're getting a more straight line away from there to pull the fish. Plus, you know, you're getting out farther. It keeps everything in line. I don't really know how to explain what I'm saying.
No, you're describing it actually pretty perfectly, because when the boat swings back out backwards, you're actually going to be pulling on the line and pulling the fish away from that structure.
And you got to get the person to walk to the back of the boat.
Yeah.
If they just stand there in the front, that fish is going to go back around that piling or that structure and get wrapped up. If they walk to the back, they're automatically pulling as they walk back because the boat's moving away.
Right. You know, and you just got a much, much better chance and realistic chance of landing that fish, because those bumpers are all wood with pilings coming down straight down and also at angles. So there's a lot of, you know, a lot of stuff for them to get you into and break you off, but that's why they're there.
Right.
You know, it's a great ambush point.
Yeah, and it's very heavy structure, cover, they like that. I like fishing those snook around there. You can do it casting, but it's a lot harder. And trolling the boat, if I say I've got three people, we draw lots. One person trolls at a time. And, you know, you go down one side, you swing the boat around, you come back down the other side of the bumpers, and then you switch people, reel in the bait, and switch, cast out. And I'll usually do a rattle trap, excuse me, a bomber. Is there any other lure that you would throw? Because what I do is when I make my second sweep, I'm not only changing anglers, I'm changing lures. I might start with the rattle trap, but then I'm going to go to the bomber. I don't want that same rattle trap going by them all the time. I do better when I switch anglers to switch lures.
Yeah. And that's a good idea, because sometimes you can figure out what the pattern is as far as either the color, shape, or size. So changing all of that whole scenario makes a big difference. Me personally, the only other lure that I would personally troll through there besides what you already called off would be either the one of the X-Rap series in the Rapala or
the Yeah, the XR-10.
Yeah. Yeah, or the Storm Twitch Stick, you know, and those are... Those are both suspending style baits versus the bomber's a floating style.
Right.
So for me with that suspending bait, it works for me in one main scenario. If that tide starts to slow down just a little bit, I can get by with a little bit slower troll or a much slower retrieve on my cast and still keep that bait down in that strike zone versus that floating bomber. You have to retrieve it just a little bit faster to keep it down because it's always wanting to fight that buoyancy to come back to the surface.
Okay, I'll go along with that. Last night I picked the High Seas fluorocarbon leader. I was doing 60 pound for the tarpon. And I was using one to throw a chunk of mullet out. I never got around to it. But I was using a 7-aught octopus, just a J-hook. Because I have a hard time getting a circle hook through a chunk of dead bait. You know what I mean? The points and the going the wrong way. So I was using the J-hook on there. I would say the big thing you got to remember with that is to, when that fish starts taking off, feel the weight of the fish and give a good hook set. And then when the hook set, if it sticks, do it two or three more times.
Yeah. You know, and what you're describing is absolutely perfect with that, because, I mean, I have a hard time.
Of course it is. That surprised you. Did that surprise you, RJ?
Not at all.
I was perfect?
Not at all. I got it right away.
Yeah, I'm sitting here going, well, go ahead, Captain Obvious.
Yeah, there's only one Doubting Thomas in the whole group.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay, anyway.
And just be prepared, because that fish is going to jump very quickly. You know, for some reason, you know, one, obviously it's shallow, but those fish come up right on the surface to hit your lure. You're within 2 or 3 feet, and when they hit it, you got to be quick to set the hook, but be quick to ready to bow to that fish as he breaks the surface.
I can't curtsy to the king?
You could if you wanted to.
All right. Why wouldn't you curtsy? Why do you have to bow?
I don't know. You got to let the slack in the line, mainly.
Okay.
Like curtsy. I mean, you're still dropping them down a little bit. So,
well, not
and
really.
And do you have to wear a skirt to curtsy?
Well, you know,
it ain't going to happen here.
I'm sitting here thinking to myself, okay, bow to the king. Well, why couldn't you curtsy? What the hell is it? The heck is this bow to the king for? Oh, is this like a salute of, you know, excuse me, your majesty?
Yeah. It's your way of earning the right to be able to hopefully land that fish.
All right. What it actually is about is creating slack in the line. And the whole idea behind bowing to the king is if you hook up, let's say you're on the front deck of your boat, boom, boom, you set the hook. First thing you want to do is take at least one step back away from the edge of the boat. Get onto the boat a little bit more. Now, if the fish starts to jump and come up, not only can you extend your arms out, point the rod at the fish, bend a little bit at the waist, you can take a step forward.
Yeah.
And it's about creating the slack. Because when tarpon jump, they come way up, and then they kind of lay over on their side. Well, if they hit the water, and let's say when they're coming over, they get on top of the fishing line, and you're pulling it tight, and that fish hits the water with it, it's going to rip the hook out of his mouth. It's going to break the line. Something bad is going to happen. What you're doing is creating the slack so there's no, the fish can't rip the hook out of its own mouth.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's why they call it bowing. What you're doing is extending your upper body forward and at the same time extending your arms out. It would be more like one of those Egyptian prayer things where on their knee and they got their arms out in front of them, you know, bowing to the deity, you know.
The tarpon gods.
Yeah, that's it. You know, get on your knees and just bow right over to the side. All right. Bad move on your knees. You'll get jerked off the boat.
Yeah.
All right. Tarpon are okay around all the bridges, as we found out last night. It's pretty darn tough. Where would be your best bet to go hit tarpon right now?
Definitely Boca Grande Pass. I mean, those fish are starting to show up in alarming numbers, and it's getting
alarming real numbers. We getting scared?
No, but getting excited. You know, a week and a half ago there was say 10,000 fish in there, but Thursday, Friday, and Saturday there was a really strong outgoing tide, and the crabs actually flushed. A lot of those fish actually went offshore that night and then came back in the morning with more friends with them. So the party started.
Okay, so Boca Grande Pass is the party spot right now for tarpon.
And you're coming up on a full moon, and that signifies tarpon's usual first spawn, which always happens at late April, early May, and goes on for a couple more moons at least.
All right. Carl was out there this morning. He hooked one up on crabs, right?
Yes. Yep. He's drifting crabs out there where most of the guys are drifting crabs right now.
All right. It's been a pretty good feed. Weighted or unweighted?
He's using a weight. He's using a rubber core sinker. He's not using a real heavy sinker. He's actually drifting like basically similar to how we would drift during a hill tide in the evenings, but he's doing a hover drift. You know, he's bumping that motor in and out of gear and staying above that line and trying to keep it straight down a little bit.
Okay, what we're talking about is when you get into Boca Grande Pass, let's say the tide is coming in from the Gulf of Mexico. So you're going to take your boat, you're going to run out towards the Gulf of Mexico. Do it the opposite way if the tide's going the opposite way, of course. But you're going to run your boat out there. Now, once you get out there, you turn the boat so the nose of your boat is facing down tide. Because if you try and slow your boat down with your nose up in the current, it's just going to swing around anyway. So let's get this over with. The boat swings around 180 degrees. Now, you put your boat in reverse. And the trick to doing a lot of this is you're using the motor in reverse to slow down the speed of your drift, to make you move, and so you're not moving so fast. You can use a very light weight, sometimes little or no weight. You cast up, if you're fishing a blue crab, cast it, or pass crab, cast up into the current, and the guy on the motor is going to keep working that reverse, just keep it going in reverse, to try and let that bait catch up to the boat. Now, once the bait's caught up to the boat, because you've cast up into there, you start easing up on the throttle, and you want to watch so your line stays right off the side of the boat. You don't want it up in front of you or behind you. You want it to stay off in front or right off the side of your boat. Now, if it starts getting a little in front of you, you're going too slow on your drift, the bait's passing you. If the bait is towards the rear of the boat, then you're not in reverse enough. You're going too fast. You're dragging that bait up. And it's a little thing, but you're using the motor to adjust your rate of drift.
Yeah, well, that's the best way to describe it.
So, now, one of the things out there is I've used the Storm Wildlife Swim Baits as tarpon jigs out there, and it's mildly effective. But what about the DOA Terrorize? Now, the only thing I can see about it is when I'm working the Terrorize, I almost do it like I'm doing an MR-17, a mirror lure.
Yeah.
I'm kind of twitch, you know, and I give it two little taps of the rod tip, just pop, pop, and it goes left, right, or right, left. It darts, and then I make it pause, bringing it up a little bit, and then two very sharp hits to the rod. It gives that side-to-side darting action that the Terrorize does so well, better than anything. And they're amazing tarpon baits.
Yeah, they're probably the number one selling tarpon bait in the Keys.
Well, for, I would say, around Florida, the DOA Baitbuster and the DOA Terrorize are the top two tarpon lures anywhere.
Oh, absolutely.
Nobody else comes even close.
No, not even.
So, could you use a bait buster in Boca Impasse?
You probably could, but I've honestly never tried it because I think it would, the weight that you would have to do to get it to go down, because it is a fairly buoyant bait. I mean,
it's 5/8 of an ounce.
Yeah, but it's a hollow bait, so the way it swims down there, I have a hard time using it in that stronger current on the bridges.
Right.
So I don't know how effective it would be in the pass. I mean, I could see it working, but I just don't know how I would mess around with it. I'd have to experiment with it more to give an honest opinion.
Now, I'm looking at this crab trap ball, and I haven't got to the point where I was even thinking about it, and I brought it the second time it's visited the thing. We've never mentioned it. So at least I gave you a mention there, Mr. Ball. All right. Water temps, Naples, 80 degrees, 80.4 degrees, supposed to be 77, so it's 78, 79, 80, a little over 3 degrees higher than normal. St. Pete, 76.8, supposed to be 74, a little over 2 degrees. So we're running 2 to 3 degrees above normal. Now you get up to Pensacola, where fish like the king mackerel want to spend their summers and stuff. It's supposed to be 71, and it's a little bit less than that. It's 70.3. So Pensacola's right on track, but, you know, they've had a lot of rain up there, a lot of cloud cover, and it's the cloud cover more than the rain that keeps the water from heating up. The rays of the sun, the energy part of it, whatever it is.
Ultraviolets.
Yeah, it doesn't hit the water when it can't get through the clouds.
Right.
And so you don't get that solar radiation warming the water up. Now, we've had a lot of clear skies here. And the clear skies is what's making our water warmer. I was marking in the harbor last night at 80 degrees in front of Harbor Heights.
Really?
Yeah, it was 80 degrees in front of Harbor Heights. A little warm for this time of year.
Yeah.
About 4 degrees.
But that makes it good for the fish because it's turning them on sooner.
Okay.
You know, because, I mean, under certain situations, you know, snook and tarpon.
At my age, getting turned on sooner really isn't a benefit. Why is it for the fish? Maybe when I was younger, you know, I was more psyched. But now I got a limited window. I don't need anything happening too early.
Both snook and tarpon are going into their spawn. You know, they're going into their big spawning schools right now. So water temperature plays the most important role to it next to the flood tides.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to say, judging by the Gulf temperatures, king mackerel are going to be pretty much north of us for a while. With 76, 80 degrees and 70 up in Pensacola. Once Pensacola warms up, matches the rest of us, those kings will come back. But right now, I would say scattered few kings. A lot of big red grouper out in that 35 miles out, 80 feet of water or so. A lot of fish out there right now, boys and girls. Red grouper going off the chain. Up on the Peace River, a lot of catfish. Some nice schools of ladyfish. Don't know why that's all we know about. Okay.
Yeah.
Some snappers up there, too.
Little first-hand experience there.
I double-checked the red tide for you boys and girls, and there is a background to very, very low in the samples in Charlotte County. But Lee County, on the other hand, has had a couple of low and medium amounts, mostly off of the in the near Gulf. And there are some fish kills reported down there, but it's very mild red tide stuff going on right now. There is no big blooms of red tide. If it hits, it's going to be very quick. It's going to be, you know, I'm not going to say me at 10 o'clock. Okay. Right. We're going to be offshore Permit Kings. Permit Kings 3 to 15 miles out?
Yeah.
Permit?
Yeah, Permit. Permit are starting to show up really good numbers on a lot of the reefs out there. People are still quiet about it, plus it's been a little breezy and lumpy, so a lot of your permit fishermen are used to going out onto these reefs and kind of looking for their tails or seeing that big shiny mirror down under the water, but it's been a little on the lumpy side to get all that, so not a lot of people are as aware that they're out there now.
Spanish mackerel, any reports on along the ICW, or is it pretty much... They're in that lower part of the harbor around Cape Hayes really good. But what about along the ICW? Any reports?
Yeah, getting some good reports along the ICW, but most of your better concentrations have been closer towards the mouths of the passes. Venice Inlet, Gasparilla Pass, Stump Pass, you know, obviously Boca Grande and Captiva Pass. So
you see these?
The main thing is looking for the birds as one of the dead giveaways, because there's been a lot of small fry and even some bigger bait fish moving around. There's been some thread fins, a lot of white bait scattered up and down throughout there. So,
a lot of bait, a lot of food for them.
Yeah.
One of the things that I would have really liked, I had it with me last night, I didn't pull it out, I don't know why, is my frog talk. I'm going to take it over and show it to RJ. He hasn't seen one.
Those are absolutely unbelievable, easy to pack.
Now, that's a raincoat, believe it or not. And they work pretty darn good. I use them as a windbreaker. It's unbelievably light. It's nice. It's a frog tog jacket. They've got them in frog togs, and I forget the other one we've got. But what I like is it weighs in an ounce or something like that. Literally weighs nothing. And it's not overly hot. But once the sun goes down or first thing in the morning, it's cold on that water. And every time we'd get up to like 20 miles an hour, I was starting to get a little bit of the shivers there. And you had your jacket on last night, Robert.
Yes, I did.
And I forgot it was in my box.
One of the guys I even made the comment.
Oh, look, my frog talk.
It was me and one other guy actually had our jackets. I said, look up there, you got three doctors and an old salt. None of them have a jacket. Who's the smart ones here?
Yeah. Well, it wasn't the doctors.
I had my jacket on. He had his sweatshirt on. We both got a kick out of that for a second. You know, it got a little brisk.
Yeah, it was chilly out there. But these jackets, they're made out of the same thing as a coffee cup you would get at a gas station. They're not the styrofoam ones, but the other ones, the regular coffee cup things. It's the same material. And so it does hold water, keeps water out. They're good in a light rain or medium rain. If it's a downpour and rain, they'll leak. But
yeah,
for the most part, they're pretty good. But I use them as a windbreaker because it folds up and it goes right back in this little pouch thing here. So, just pretty awesome, because Florida's got the coldest 60 degrees in the world.
Jeez, yes, it does.
There is no place on the planet where 60 degrees is as cold as it is on Charlotte Harbor.
Yeah. No, I'll agree with that, and most of that's because of what? The humidity playing a big part of it?
Well, it's a whole wind chill factor.
Yeah.
You're a few feet off the water, you're in, you know, probably 130% humidity, and then all of a sudden you start going 20, 30 miles an hour in a boat. you get cold. That's a lot of wind chill.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up in northern Wisconsin, finished high school up there. And I've been out in 20 degrees below zero and 40 degrees below zero. I've been out where, you know, your hair freezes and you can break it off. And where you had to, you know, watch each other for frostbite spots. But, boy, if you want to just shiver, bone chilling cold, go out when it's below 70 on Charlotte Harbor. Take a ride.
Yeah.
You'll figure that out really quick because you just shake. All right. Covering around some of the other fish, the red tide thing gets a lot of news press, a lot of coverage in the papers, but I don't really think it's going to be a big thing yet. Now, once the rain starts, we'll see. If they get a lot of fertilizer out there, nutrients. But as far as I know, the Peace River's way down. It's, I think, 84 cubic feet a second. And what should we be at right now, Robert? I think the average
300
is
300 and something.
330. Yeah, it should be around 300 cubic feet a second average this time of year.
Yeah.
And so we're about a third of the normal water flow. So there's not any nutrients coming down the Peace River, really.
No.
And I didn't check Okeechobee for flow. But I don't think they've been draining the lake, have they?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, well, who knows? Yeah.
It's Army.
That's Army Corps engineers. Yeah. That, God knows. I mean, there is a reason why drugs should be illegal, because whatever they give the Army Corps engineers, they should not be allowed to have.
Yeah.
Let's see. Spanish recovered. Offshore permits we talked about. Snook, we got a little bit left on snook season. About 4 days, right?
Yeah, it closes. Is it 30 or 31 days in April?
What's been the snook reports?
Been pretty good. I mean, obviously the people that are still doing the most productive as far as catching slot-sized snook have mostly been trolling in the canals. I mean, we've been teaching that for years and years, and it seems like this year it caught on for some reason. You know, the PGI canals, even the Port Charlotte canals, guys are trolling up and down them. I've had several reports in the upper Myakka River from the 41 bridge up to past Snook Haven. You know, guys have been catching some pretty good snook.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible. I see a lot of people trolling. I even got one of my neighbors is trolling up and down our canal. He doesn't catch anything, but he likes trolling.
Yeah.
So
it's finally caught on where it's become fairly popular, I guess, because people are finally realizing it can be productive. They're so...
Well, it's hard to cast all day and keep casting at the shoreline, casting at shoreline, casting at shoreline for mile after mile.
Well, that too, but I mean, the other thing is I think people are realizing, well, I'm going at idle speed only. Why am I not fishing on my way out or in? Why shouldn't I be dragging a lure? Because the bycatch is either going to be a snook, a tarpon, or a jack. I mean...
Trout or a ladyfish or even a catfish sometimes. I've caught catfish trolling the canals.
Absolutely, but you know, usually it's those big three is what gets people excited because they strip so much line so quick.
It's the excitement factor of the tarpon, the snook, and the, what else did you say?
Jacks.
Yes.
And there's been some studly jacks around this year, which has been awesome.
Any idea? I mean... Jack Crevel is a highly priced food fish. Yes, it is. Don't give me that look. Everywhere but Florida. So it's funny because it's usually, maybe the price of jacks went way down because the commercial guys usually just bang them up. They're gone. I mean, as soon as they show up, they're netted, boxed, and sent off to whatever country is buying them at the moment. But this year... Big school after big school.
Yeah, I'll take it.
I'll take it too.
I'm not going to question it because it got real bad for a while there.
I would like to see Jack's put on the you're not allowed to sell list.
Oh, absolutely. That would be great.
I mean, to me, you know, and I would hate to do that to the commercial guys because a lot of friends are commercial fishermen. But I would like to see, you know, a stop for commercial sale of Jack Crevel.
Yeah, no, I agree because, I mean, you know, it's funny, the few fish that people make the most fun of, or two of the most made fun of fish in Florida as far as when people go out on charters, is Jack Crevel and Barracuda.
Okay.
Now, that's statewide. You know, people kind of complain, barracuda, oh, it's a garbage fish, blah, blah, blah. Oh, you caught another Jack Crevel, blah, blah, blah. You know, big deal. But yet, millions and millions of dollars are made by charter captains every year in the Keys in the Miami area by barracuda, because that barracuda saved that trip that day because it was blowing too hard to go do whatever other targeted species there was. So they were able to go somewhere on the flats or one of the back islands or canals and catch 2 to 4 foot cudas. And then you got jacks back, you know, 10 years ago before we started to have a depleting population of them. There was days where fishing was lousy, and we would just pull up to one of the canal systems and chum a little bit, and you knew the jacks were going to be there in 5 minutes, whether they were 2 pounds or 10 pounds, and make that entire day, you know, off of a couple Jack Crevel. And not only that, but like barracuda, out of all the game fish that are mounted by these taxidermist places in Florida, Gray's Taxidermy has an unbelievable taxidermy place down in Fort Lauderdale area. The number one mounted fish that they do in Florida is the barracuda.
Really?
That's their number one most replicated fish.
It's nothing like what I thought it would be.
Yep. Everyone thinks it's going to be something prestigious like a snook or a tarpon or a sailfish. Nope. Barracuda number one, hands down.
Well, you know, we've got that one about 6 foot up on the wall up
there. Yeah, that one's an awesome one. That one gets a lot of really cool feedback from people.
It's got real teeth in it, too.
Yeah,
that's so what makes it really when you look at the one on the wall in the store, that's actual real teeth in it. So, I'm sitting here. Yeah. I tell you what, I don't know. We went fishing last night. I've got all this stuff to talk about, and...
Hey, fishing's getting incredible. So, I mean, we can pick anything we want right now. That's the coolest part.
Unless it's windy.
Well, yeah, but species-wise.
All right, what, let's say we were going to go out tomorrow. What do we want to go for?
I'd want to get up early and honestly head out to the pass. Unless it's blowing 100 miles an hour. If it's blowing 100 miles an hour on it, I don't want it.
Yeah, and you really want to be leaving while it's dark out.
Yeah.
Idling along, and then as soon as you got enough light where you can see, pick it up and get out there. Just try and get as much Bokaran Pass as soon as it's breaking daylight.
Yeah. You know, it's a matter how windy it is, you know, because if it's blowing still due out of the west tomorrow, it gets too lumpy for me to be comfortable.
Outgoing tide with westward wind. I'm not going to the pass.
Not even
close. That's going to be rolling. You're going to have washing machine type water there where it comes up 6-8 foot and drops back down. You're literally going up and down 6 foot.
Yeah. No, I want nothing to do with that.
Because when the tide's going out, going westward, and the wind's coming from the west, they're just fighting each other. And the incoming tide is fine with a west wind. It doesn't get that lumpy. But that outgoing tide, oh, my God. That's scary, being in Bokaran Pass with... the wind coming in and the tide going out. Yeah, that's rough.
Not fun.
Let's see. Crabs are good bait right now. Anything else tarpon hitting on?
Shrimp and squirrel fish. Those are by far your top three baits you want to have if you're going out around, whether you're in the pass or the intercoastal or along the beaches, trying to find those couple oddball stragglers. But your better concentration is definitely there, and I'm definitely going to take shrimp with me.
Yeah. So... shrimp is still hanging in there.
Oh, yeah. And it will probably for another couple weeks.
All right. With the crab bite going on, you've got the past crabs, blue crabs. Shrimp still doing good, I think, because of the crab bite. Now, right now the tides are real slow. We're not getting those nighttime hill tides, so the crabs aren't really going to be flushing as much.
Not for another few days, probably.
So what do you think about possibly getting into, like, thread fins, white bait, flashier bait fish like that? Or is that something tarpon are going to be starting to look at? Or is it still too early in the year for it?
They definitely will eat some of that, but I think that's going to be those oddball fish that you're finding in the intercoastal or right along the beaches. You know, when they get into those passes, they tend to get kind of really focused for some reason.
So, yeah, it's just kind of weird. Ladyfish up in the harbor. I'm hearing a lot of people catching tarpon on chunks of mullet lately.
Yeah.
I think as far as bait fish goes, a chunk of mullet out in the deep holes in the harbor, going to be a great bait. Use, if you've got a larger mullet, let's say 14 inches long, I'd definitely only be cutting it in half. I wouldn't be using anything smaller than that.
No, I wouldn't either.
I want a 6, 8, 10 inch piece of bait for those tarpon, big. But I do want, like, say, if it's only a 10-inch mullet, I'm going to cut the tail off. Just put the hook through the head, slice the tail off, or just rip the belly up, or maybe butterfly it a little bit. I do want to expose some more of it, but I don't want a small piece of bait. I don't want all those little catfish being able to get it.
Yeah.
I want them to push it around, then the tarpon go, oh, what are you guys doing? Come in and eat it.
Yeah, the only bycatch I want out of that situation is either the cobia or the shark, which is very realistic right now while you're tarpon fishing with that kind of bait.
So the cobia are still in good numbers?
They've still been around pretty good. I mean, enough where it's good incidental bycatch. You know, I haven't heard a lot this week with people sight fishing them, but there's been enough around where it's worth keeping your eyes open and a rod ready for them.
A lot of hammerhead sharks in the past. Got a few hammerheads up in the harbor. I'm going to say more Atlantic sharpnose in the harbor.
Yeah.
Probably kind of a mixture of just about everything right now.
Yeah.
But it's getting good. Watch the winds, boys and girls. Be safe out there. Fish and Frank here in the chair. Robert in the chair across from me. We got RJ running the stuff. And oh, okay. I didn't know what that meant.
Say goodbye, Frank.
Okay,
goodbye,
I can Frank. Say goodbye? All right. You scared me with all that stuff. All right. Bye, boys and girls. See you next week. That your life, your sweet wife is going to catch more.